Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Turkey portrays itself as the leading nation in an increasingly turbulent region of the world. The country that straddles Europe and the Middle East is a secular democracy with a thriving economy. It's a member of NATO and a potential member of the European Union. But there are major conflicts both inside Turkey and just outside its southeastern border, in Syria, Iran, and Iraq. Also, Turkey is drawing widespread criticism for jailing more reporters than any country in the world. The government now equates dissent with terrorism. The Committee to Protect Journalists recently released an in-depth report with this conclusion: press freedom in Turkey has reached a crisis point. Emre'n Zaman is a Turkish columnist and the country's correspondent for The Economist News magazine. She's joining us today by telephone. Emre'n, welcome to Global Journalist. Hey, before we focus on the issue of press freedom, let's outline some of the major news developments in Turkey. You write a column twice a week for the mass circulation Turkish daily Habertürk. What are some of the major topics you've been covering this month and that people should be knowing about?
Well, first of all, there's no lack of news in Turkey. Right. And unfortunately, in recent times, it's usually bad news. And so one story that I've been covering is the case of a very famous Turkish sociologist who's been accused of bombing Istanbul's Spice Bazaar. This is a case that began 14 years ago, and she was acquitted three times. And there are all kinds of forensic reports that prove that this was not a bombing, but rather a gas explosion. And still, a court has once again overturned the non-guilty verdict. And the reason for this, many believe, is because this sociologist has been delving into the Kurdish problem. The Kurdish problem is radioactive as far as the Turkish state is concerned.
And I understand that the tension has increased in the southeast in recent months, clashes with Kurdish rebels. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. Unfortunately, the violence has begun to escalate again ever since the Turkish government decided to shelve what it called the Kurdish opening, that being a process of trying to negotiate a settlement with the Kurdish rebel group that's been waging this separatist campaign for the past 27 years, and at the same time introducing reforms that would address the Kurds' demands for cultural and political rights. And so the government has put a stop to that and instead is embracing a security-based approach, which essentially means trying to defeat the rebels through military means.
And let's talk a little bit about how the Syria civil war is affecting Turkey. Some 200,000 Syrian refugees have crossed into Turkey. There's been some missiles fired back and forth, and now Turkey is asking NATO to put some anti-missile defense systems, give them some Patriot missiles. How does that affect what's happening in Turkey and also the relationship between the government and the Kurds?
Well, the whole Syria conflict is a very big issue in Turkey today because there's a lot of criticism of the government's policy, which was essentially, until recently, entirely focused on regime change in Syria, a country with which Turkey, until last year, had very close relations and then did a U-turn and decided it was time for Assad to go, which is a reasonable position given the slaughter that's going on in Syria. But what upset many Turks, including supporters of this government, is the fact that Turkey took this a step forward by providing haven to Syrian rebels and allowing the free flow of arms from Turkey into Syria, and some people believe that this has only just worsened the problem. And one other effect of this is the fact that because the Syrian rebels inside Turkey have been able to move freely in the north of Syria and have managed to get rid of Assad's forces there, this has allowed the Kurds in Syria to move more freely as well, and indeed to gain control of a string of mainly Kurdish towns very close to the Turkish border. And the group that's spearheading this move is thought to be very closely allied to the Kurdish rebels who are fighting government forces inside Turkey. So yet another front in this battle between Turkey and its Kurds.
And so in some ways, the civil war in Syria is destabilizing Turkey.
Absolutely, yes. The civil war in Syria is destabilizing Turkey, and particularly because of what I just told you, the fact that this Kurdish group that's closely allied to the Turkish Kurdish rebels is now becoming increasingly influential in an area very close to Turkey's border, and this is causing grave concern.
And what has been the government's reaction to this as far as how it impacts internal policies? Does it seem like the crackdown on dissent is increasing, and is it in part because of the security concerns?
Well, I mean, the Syrian conflict is relatively new, and the government's sort of clampdown on dissent predates that. But we can say that the Syrian conflict has added to that, in the sense that anyone who is critical of the Syrian policy is also becoming a target for the government. Indeed, a group of journalists who were offered an interview with President Assad, and I was one of them, couldn't go at the last minute because we believe that the government put pressure on our newspaper owners for us not to go.
The Committee to Protect Journalists recently did a survey, an in-depth report on Turkey, and found that at least 61 journalists are in prison simply because of doing their job. And it represented the second biggest media crackdown in the 27 years that the group has monitored free press. Is this issue widely reported in the press about the repression, the local press?
The repression of journalists is a very big issue in Turkey. It's certainly one that the opposition keeps constantly reminding the government of. It's one reason that the government is... No, wait, let me just take that again. I sort of... can you just ask me the question?
Yeah, well, okay. The how widely reported is the issue of press repression within the domestic Turkish news?
The issue of press repression is widely reported in the Turkish news, and it seems like a bit of a contradiction, given that the press is not really free in Turkey. So reporting about it not being free is certainly puzzling, probably, to outsiders, but it is a very big issue and has become much more so simply because now mainstream pro-establishment newspapers and journalists are feeling the heat, whereas in the past it was only really fringe left-wing publications and the Kurds, non-mainstream actors who were under pressure, being jailed, even tortured, and killed, in fact. But now that pro-establishment mainstream journalists are also under pressure, finally they're sort of realizing that this is a very important issue.
And how has this affected you?
Well, thankfully, I'm not being prosecuted. And so far I've managed to hang on to my job, but I'm very conscious of the fact that if I continue to criticize the government, the prime minister, It wouldn't come as a huge surprise if I, too, were sacked. And in fact, I used to appear on a program on the state-run television station, TRT, and was recently booted out because I believe I was being too critical of the government and its policies on that show.
And a human rights expert from the United Nations criticized Turkey this month for using the vague counterterrorism law to prosecute not only journalists, but activists and lawyers, and holding them for long periods in jail without access to a lawyer.
People tend to focus on the journalists most, but we have hundreds, if not thousands, depending on how you count, students in jail. You have doctors who are being prosecuted, union leaders, as you pointed out, lawyers. There's an incredible wave of repression against anyone who expresses any form of a criticism of this government and its policies.
This seems to be quite a change since the beginning of this administration. There were high hopes when Erdogan was elected, and there was talk about them eventually getting in the EU, and now it's seemed to have turned a different direction. But there's still, international pressure, and they're still in NATO. Will the international attention change anything? And what do you make of this turnabout?
Well, first of all, you're right to say that when this government first came to power, we were all filled with hope because it embarked on a wave of reforms. It did a lot to curb the influence of the army, which is among the biggest problems in Turkey, the fact that for decades the army was basically running the country from behind the scenes. And this government has done more than any of its predecessors to curb that influence. And as you probably know, there are currently hundreds of Turkish army officers in jail being prosecuted for allegedly trying to overthrow this government. They also did some very good things for the Kurds. For the first time, we have Kurdish language television on a state-run channel. That's considered, or it was at least, revolutionary. But in recent years, the government seems to have done a U-turn on the reform process and indeed seems to be going in the opposite direction. And the reason for this, some would argue, is because the current Prime Minister Erdogan wants to become the president when that post comes free in 2014. And he believes that he needs to court the nationalist vote in order to be elected. And that means, of course, cracking down on the Kurds and fighting them in the mountains,
it sounds like he's taking an approach from the Putin playbook, or maybe even Morsi in Egypt.
Those comparisons are being made, and particularly because some believe that the current president will simply switch jobs with the prime minister. So that he'll become prime minister, and he's from the same political party, and then the prime minister will somehow be elected the president. But in general terms, the comparison is becoming an increasingly fair one when we look at what's happening inside Turkey with the repression.
Now, the justice minister and his reaction to the free press crackdown that was reported in by CPJ. He refused to address these specific cases, but he asserted that many of the reporters are terrorists in disguise. And then he reviewed Turkey's history of military coups in 1960, 71, 80, 82. And he added, quote, "My job is to keep the country secure. That is as important as free speech." So is that somewhat legitimate? Is the fear of another military coup driving part of this crackdown?
Well, I think as far as it pertains to journalists, not at all. Because when you look at Turkey's penal code, when you look at the laws, it's the laws that are actually the problem, because the definition of a terrorist is so vague that it catches almost anyone in the net. Those laws need to change, and that's what, you know, needs to be addressed. And the government, to its credit, has been talking about changing the laws, amending them, so that not so many people do end up in jail, and that the definition of terrorism becomes a more specific and legitimate one. But, you know, they keep talking, but they haven't moved.
Are they? I read that there is a the Justice and Development Party, the party in power, is proposing a constitutional amendment that would restrict coverage of the judicial system, national security, and other public issues, along with a vaguely defined topic of public morals. Do you know if this proposal has a chance of?
No, that proposal, as far as I know, has not gone through. The main thing here really is that, in fact, Turkey's constitution needs to be rewritten if Turkey is to become a truly democratic place, because the current document was written by the military when it seized power in 1980. And if we can rewrite this constitution in ways that address the grievances of the Kurds, other minority groups, and enshrines the true democracy in it, only then can we really move forward. But the trouble is that so far the parliament, which is working on a new draft, doesn't seem to be making any progress because the country is so polarized. And the way that the drafting committee was set up, it says that the committee has to be unanimous when it comes to each and every article that's being debated, and trying to find unanimity between the Kurds on the one hand and the right-wing nationalists on the other seems almost impossible. So it seems to be doomed to failure.
Now, I want to continue that discussion, but I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcast at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. For this topic, we have 10 short profiles of jailed Turkish journalists. So please send your questions or comments to globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at GJJournalist. Now, it seems like the economy's getting a lot better, thriving actually when you compare it with other countries in the EU. Erdogan is securing his power. If the economy is doing well and he's more comfortable in power, do you think that will help him lead the country toward more an open society?
Well, unfortunately, one would have wanted to believe that, but he keeps stressing stability, and stability is a word that's often used in countries where governments tend to be authoritarian. They use it to justify that authoritarianism. It's certainly true that this government has done a fantastic job so far of managing the economy, and that's why it continues to be so popular, because for ordinary Turks, their pocketbooks matter a lot more than civil liberties. And that's why people who actually care deeply about democracy and human rights feel rather vulnerable and marginalized, and would like to see more pressure coming from outside, because in the near future it doesn't seem like this government will be going anywhere anytime soon. It remains quite popular.
And let's talk a little bit more about the Kurds. Have you traveled in the southeast?
Yes, I travel in the southeast all the time. But before we get to the Kurds, I would like to say this.
Okay.
You know, we are criticizing this government very strongly on its human rights record, etc. But But let's not forget that Turkey was a far worse place before this government came to power. And as I mentioned previously, journalists were not only being jailed, they were being killed. And in fact, what we're doing now is measuring this government against its own record, which was an extremely positive one when it first came to power. I would argue that Turkey still is a more democratic place than it was before this government came to power. What's saddening is that now there seems to be a rollback. And we can move on to your question.
Okay. Well, we can talk more. Where did you grow up in Turkey?
I actually grew up all over the world. My father was a diplomat. So.
Okay. Has life changed a lot in recent years in Turkey?
Life changed hugely in Turkey in recent years. The economic boom can be felt throughout the country, and certainly in the Kurdish areas. When I first started reporting there, the main Kurdish city called Diyarbakir used to be, well, a dump. Mm-hmm. And now it's full of shiny new buildings, beautiful roads, hospitals, unrecognizable, in fact. But as we see in Spain, in the case of Spain and in Scotland, economic prosperity isn't enough to tamp down nationalist desires among people.
But do you still think that Turkey is a model for some of the emerging democracies in predominantly Muslim countries?
Well, Turkey, yes, does remain a model, and I'll say it remains a model specifically because this government may not be doing such wonderful things on the human rights front, but it was popularly elected in a free and fair election. And I think that's a pretty big deal when we look at the rest of the Muslim world. There are very few countries that can boast of that. And at the same time, yes, journalists are being put in jail. There is a huge clampdown on dissent. But regardless, the conversation about all these issues does continue. There's a very lively press, hundreds and hundreds of private news channels, radio stations, where there's a very lively conversation, as I said, about all of these very thorny issues, and that gives me hope.
And is the internet thoroughly free there?
Well, the internet is not thoroughly free here, and that is another issue of concern because the government routinely bans websites, and notably ones that are linked to the Kurds. And also, of course, being a pro-Islamic government, there's a lot of concern about family values, etc. So there's a lot of censorship when it comes to websites that would be deemed to be immoral, shall we say.
How has it helped you with your job? Are you able to communicate more through social networks to find out what people are thinking and get more information on some of the developments there?
Absolutely. I would say that the social media, and particularly Twitter, has made a huge difference, certainly facilitated my work very much. And Turkey is a very, Turks rather, are very avid Twitter users. In fact, even I have some 44,000 followers.
And you've traveled around the world and are you know Turkey really well. How would you, for an outsider perspective, I mean, what are some characteristics of Turkey that really puts a stamp on its individuality? What are the Turks like?
Well, I hate to make sweeping generalizations, and I think the question of what the Turks are like is kind of what ails Turkey, because they still haven't decided who they are or who they want to be. And that's, in fact, the real crisis in Turkey, this business of trying to determine an identity that embraces all the differences, all the multilingual, multi-ethnic diversity of this society, one where for the past 70-odd years, successive governments, egged on by the army, have been trying to impose an identity that's a very narrow one, one of being a Turk. The Turk only speaks Turkish. That's why we have a Kurdish problem, because for years their existence was in fact denied. And after the military coup in 1980, their language was banned for a long while. So this identity issue, I think, is a very big one in Turkey. And there's, of course, the whole business of suppressing expressions of overt piety and symbols of overt piety that went on right until this government came to power. For instance, women wearing the Islamic style headscarf were not permitted to attend universities. This was a huge problem for many, many years. People were discriminated against on the basis of either being Kurdish or too religious.
This week, the government lifted the ban on headscarves in religious schools. What's that an indicator of?
I think it's an indicator of the country becoming a more democratic and truly secular place, okay. One where the state doesn't interfere with people's faith, which is what it's done for decades.
Wow.
It's told people just how religious they can be or not.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. We've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today was economist, correspondent, and columnist Amberine Zaman. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungekar is our executive producer. Donovan Ferguson was our lead producer, assisted by Nina Pantic. Now stay with us for Free Press Watch and join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalists where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Taylor DeHaze. Today's news comes from the Committee to Protect Journalists and Reporters Without Borders. Two journalists were killed in Syria during the past 5 days. Videographer Mohammed Al-Khal was killed while covering a shelling as government forces clashed with the rebel Free Syrian Army. Rebel forces allegedly shot and killed reporter for Syrian state TV Bassel Tawfiz Youssef outside his home. According to his employer, those responsible for his death might be linked to Al-Qaeda, though the regime has labeled all the opposition fighters as terrorists. Within the past 3 months, he has also been kidnapped and threatened. A Brazilian website publisher was gunned down after receiving repeated death threats. Eduardo Carvalho was the owner and editor of the Ultima Hora news website, where he posted articles that were critical of the government and police. He is the 11th journalist killed in Brazil this year. An Iraqi journalist was killed after being shot 3 times in the chest while driving in Baghdad. Samir Sheikh Ali was the editor of the Baghdad Masses and was a human rights activist. Reporters say his death is linked directly to his reporting. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalists. I'm Taylor DeHaze.